I'm here with Susan Ellinger, pianist and artistic director of the classical music program at the Blue Sage Center for the Arts in Paonia. Her debut CD, The Viennese Style, has just arrived. And the CD features late sonatas of Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for getting in touch with me, Allie. It's a pleasure, as always.
This album is your first recording.
This is my first solo record by myself, yeah.
What made you want to do that? What inspired you?
So I guess the inspiration really came out of the preparation for these concerts that I performed last year. So I had this sort of this challenge to myself to see if I could do it, or also to learn from it. So I decided to play two separate programs on two consecutive nights. And I was wondering, first of all, what it would be like to prepare for that, because it's like memorizing over 2 hours of music and then playing it, you know, two nights back to back. I was just wondering what the pacing would, what that would feel like, if I could do it, how, you know, just
a challenge.
Yeah,
for yourself.
It was a challenge for myself. And I, you know, I see other people that, you know, people that are working out in the field, juggling tons of programs. And I just thought it would be a good learning experience anyway. So I programmed that for myself, started working on it. And then I thought, why don't I record some of this repertoire, because I have a lot. And I just started to think about how that would work. And literally within a week, I got a call from a friend in London, old friend who's a producer and composer. And I asked him for his advice, you know, what should I do? Where should I go? Who should I talk to? And he said, well, I'm going to produce it and you're going to come to Europe and let's do it in Berlin and I'll be in touch. And that was it. He just produced the whole thing. And
this is a good friend to have.
Yeah, he kind of took over the and he's been an incredible champion for me. I think he saw the time was right for me to do this. And so he put together an incredible team of people, unbelievable piano technician who represents the Bösendorfer brand, which is a Viennese piano. And one of the few pianos that are still handmade in the world. There are only three, I think, Steinway, Fagioli in Italy, and Bösendorfer in Vienna. And then I worked with an engineer out of Hamburg who does a lot of work for Sony Classical in Germany. And he was my producer, great musician. And he's not a pianist, he's a bass player, but he's a, you know, highly trained classical musician and trained as an engineer. And so he was actually directing me in the sessions, which I don't know if what I was expecting exactly, but I was so relieved to have somebody that really knew what they were hearing and what they were doing and tracking everything. And so, you know, he would tell me, no, we got it, or all right, we need to do it again, or, you know, I think your balance is off here, or what do you think about this tempo, or, you know, just things like that, really giving me great advice. And I mean, I went really prepared, and I was actually recording myself quite a bit before I went to Germany. So I was ready by the time that I got there. And then my friend came over from London, and he was there. He produced a video session. So I have some video of the recording session on my website. And then I played a live concert at the very end of the recording session, and we recorded that also, and we used some of that in the recording as well, apparently. I don't know. I can't really tell.
And you recorded it in this church in Berlin, right? Can you talk about the space you were in and how that maybe lent itself to the sound or the experience?
So the space that I recorded in is an old church, maybe around 100, maybe post-World War I. It's sort of modern looking. It doesn't look like it was built hundreds and hundreds of years ago. But I would say post somewhere between World War I and World War II. It's called Jesus Christ Church, and it's in Dahlem, West Berlin. And this church is very, very in demand as a recording venue. It was discovered by the conductor of the Berlin Philharmonic after World War II. And so the conductor at the time was Rudolf Furtwängler. And he he discovered the church, discovered the acoustics. It's quite a big church. And the Berlin Phil took it over as their concert hall. That's where they started performing all the time and recording all the time. And basically, this church has been kind of booked out as a recording venue ever since. It's just constantly being used to make recordings. It's got incredibly high ceilings. They're vaulted and ribbed with wood. And I would say that it seats maybe 1,000 people, maybe not quite 1,000 people, maybe 800. It's incredibly live, so there's a lot of reverb, but at the same time, it's really warm and intimate. So if you're standing on the other side of the church and I'm talking to you, I only have to talk this loud and you can hear exactly what I'm saying. It might take a second for the sound to get to you, but it's really direct. So it's when you're playing, you can hear the sound going out and coming back to you, and there's a little bit of a delay, but at the same time, you can hear extremely well, and the sound is really warm. In any case, you'll hear the recording. It's really quite remarkable sound. I was so happy to have the opportunity to work there.
So you went to the prestigious Oberlin College for Music, and you said that while you were studying there, that you learned that the craft is all about gathering your forces technically, intellectually, and emotionally, and becoming a vehicle to channel art. Mm-hmm. And I agree that, you know, that is the secret to making great art, any kind of art really, is that you need to sort of combine all those components. I'm curious about the emotion part. How have you observed that change the sound? I'm sure that you experiment with this and you observe it in other musicians and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm also curious about how you access emotion while you're playing, if it doesn't just happen when you need it to.
If it doesn't just happen. Yeah. On demand. You must feel something now. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's different from day to day, for sure. In terms of the emotion, I think there's a lot more to it than just sort of personal self-expression. And I think with this, with, you know, concert art music, if you want to call it classical music, I hate the term classical music because it's so limiting and nothing else really describes this kind of, you know, longer form, more crafted compositionally, maybe more experimental. You know, it's so many things that kind of separate it from more popular idiomatic forms of music, but let's call it concert art music.
All right.
That sounds so elitist and horrible, though. I don't know. So in terms of the emotional component, I think that there's a lot to study and to understand before I think you kind of can unleash your own emotion and your own expression into the music. And so understanding stylistically each genre of music that you study and the aspects that go into kind of making classicism or romanticism or whatever genre of modernism, subgenre of modernism or Baroque music. And all of those things have their own considerations in terms of style, which I think is expressed through timing and touch and texture and the colors of the sound that you produce and the way you think of the architecture of the music. So all of these things coming together, that's what makes it personal. That's where you can say, well, now I understand the music, so now I can both honor the music and put myself into it now. Right. So in a way, that's the gathering of those forces. It's really a deep disciplinary study to be able to say, all right, I know this now well enough. I can interpret this now, you know, with enough kind of honesty that integrity maybe is a better word. You know, that now I can also I can afford to make it personal
mm-hmm.
without it sounding too self-indulgent or too egotistical.
And if you're just joining us, I'm here with Susan Ellinger, a pianist and artistic director at the Blue Sage Center for the Arts. And she's going to be performing a concert this Saturday at the Blue Sage. That's December 9th at 7:30 p.m. And she'll be performing solo works for piano by Romantic composer Franz Schubert. And I'd love to play another song off your new CD, Susan. We're going to hear something from Beethoven. Do you want to tell our listeners about it?
Sure. So this is the opening movement from the Beethoven Sonata in A-flat major, opus 110. And Beethoven wrote 32 piano sonatas. This is number 31. So very late, very experimental. For Beethoven, for classicism, for sonata form. And to me, this sonata really kind of represents the twilight of Beethoven's life. It's very, for Beethoven, for late Beethoven, it's very introspective. And it's very kind of twilight, and it's very improvisatory. Beethoven, in his compositional output of these 32 sonatas, he was really experimenting with writing for piano and with sonata form. If you compare number one to number 32, it really is the journey of at least one composer's lifetime, if not more than one composer. I mean, he by the time he finished number 32, he was really ushering in a new genre. Beethoven, you know, he started off as a classicist and he ended as a romanticist. And he was completely deaf by the end. So he was really inhabiting his own world. He didn't hear other composers' music at that time. I'm sure he looked at scores and I'm sure that he must have imagined something in his mind, but I don't know what it was. He certainly was still writing incredibly beautiful music, and I think this is very representative of that. And the last thing I'd like to say is that out of all of the sonatas, 32 is a lot of, that's a lot of sonatas. Out of all of these, I think only one was published in his lifetime, which is incredible. I mean, this was really his laboratory. This was a very personal place for him. So it's interesting, I think, to dive into the Beethoven sonatas and to realize that this is extremely personal work for him that he didn't really share. Thank you.
And that was Moderato from Sonata in A flat from Opus 110, Beethoven, played by Susan Ellinger, who is here in the studio with me today. Thank you for being here.
Always a pleasure.
And I was reading a little review of you on your website, and it said that you were praised for your refined, poised, and singular vision. And I was thinking about how, you know, every artist has something that makes them different. And there's no way out of that, I don't think, because we're all different people. What kind of pianist did you start out as? And I know you took a break in there somewhere, mm-hmm. too. You started out very serious about it, then you took a break. And then what brought you back to this art form? And mm-hmm. what are sort of the different versions of you in this work that you've observed?
Well, I think that I started off, you know, at such a young age that I was good enough at what I did. I had some momentum and a trajectory there. So I got on the track to go to music school. So I studied at Oberlin. I did an undergraduate degree there with a great teacher, and then went to do a master's and spent more time studying with other great teachers and performed a lot, did a lot of competitions, and it just, you know, it was a busy time, but it started when I was 4. And, you know, and then all of a sudden I found myself graduating with a master's degree, and I was in my early 20s and I had never done anything else. And I honestly was a little bit torn about what the rest of my life looked like. And I think that I couldn't really get it together by the time I finished graduate school. I just wasn't convinced that I was doing the right thing, and that I felt I had missed out on some things in life. So I still did some concerts here and there. I felt very torn and guilty that I was, you know, had all this training, but I wasn't doing anything with it. And that also I wasn't sure what, if I really wanted to have a career in music. It was very difficult. So I slowly stopped playing concerts. And then for about almost 10 years, I didn't really play piano in the way in which I had been trained. I did some other stuff with music. I played in some bands. I played keyboards and I sang and I did some film scoring, and I went off on a completely different career trajectory. I was doing software development in California, and I would come to Paonia, Colorado every once in a while to visit my sister. And at some point I rented a house out here and I started spending more time out here, and the Blue Sage Board of Directors discovered me somehow, and that I was a pianist, and they were looking for classical music programming, so they started asking me, you know, will you come play some concerts, and then will you buy us a piano, here's some money, and will you direct a concert series? So it just kind of took on a life of its own, and early on, they wanted me to do a lot, and I honestly thought about it, because I knew it was going to be a lot of work, and I wasn't really sure what the financial side of that was going to look like, because a lot of work is a lot of work. It's a lot of hours, and, you know, and how do you sort of do the numbers on that? They weren't necessarily offering me money, but they were asking me to do a lot. In any case, we worked it out. We worked it
typical
out.
Typical of a nonprofit.
In the end, I think I had to sort of educate them on how it all works, and you know, in the end, it's built itself into quite a big program. And this year is the biggest year. I think this is the 7th season. This year we have a modern music festival this coming March. Midori's coming in April with the pianist, and the programming's better than ever. We're getting lots of grants from different organizations. So we're hitting our stride, and we're really doing well. In any case, that's how I started playing again, was by coming to Paonia, Colorado. And so one thing has led to another, and I, you know, I've made this recording. I signed with management a few months ago, so I'm going to be playing more concerts, doing more traveling, making more recordings, doing more collaborations with interesting artists, and so now it's really become my life, and it's become the life that I think I imagined when I was 20, you know, but wasn't ready for and wasn't sure that I wanted. And now, you know, I'm middle-aged and I have much more stability, and I understand what is meaningful for me now and what I really want my life to look like, and that I'm incredibly lucky to be in this position to do something creative with something that I was trained so well to do, that I have the maturity and the confidence and the stability and a kind of grounding here that will allow me to make a real life out of this now. And I think that in terms of the way I'm working now versus the way my past self worked, I just can say that it's with a lot less ego, and that my priorities are really in service to the art. So that's exciting.
Well, thank you. And I've been here with Susan Ellinger, who will be performing this Saturday, December 9th at 7:30 p.m. at the Blue Sage. She'll be performing solo works for piano by romantic composer Franz Schubert. She also has a new CD out that I'm sure you can pick up at this event. Mm-hmm. And it's called The Viennese Style. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Allie.
And we're going to hear one more song. Would you introduce it, Susan?
Sure. This is the first movement from the Mozart Sonata in D major, K576. This is Mozart's last sonata. And this is the Allegro first movement.